Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
First, I'm joined now by the Minister for Finance and President of the Eurogroup, Pascal Donoghue. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks for joining us on the programme.
Thank you.
I know that next week Cabinet will be deciding what restrictions might be lifted on the 5th of April, but can you take us through the sequence? When will we expect to hear an announcement on that?
It's much as you've just said there. Cabinet will be meeting early next week. It'll be preceded by two events. The first event will be the further guidance that NPHET will give us regarding the conditions of the disease and expected progress. Secondly, there will be a meeting of the COVID Cabinet Subcommittee of the government. Both those things will happen. And then Cabinet will meet next week and will issue guidance. I absolutely appreciate the appetite for that guidance and appreciate how tired we all are and the strain that is there and how frustrated we feel regarding how long we've been battling this disease for. But we are making progress with the disease. We do have a really strong plan in relation to vaccinations, and the decisions that we make now, Claire, will set the ground for how we get to a far better place later on in the year.
I know people have lots of hopes and concerns around what might happen on the 5th of April, but in particular what I wanted to ask you about remaining secondary school students, because I know parents are very concerned about whether they will return or not if cases continue to rise.
And they will return. I am very much aware of the impact on the well-being of our young girls and boys, on families, and what that means in particular for the ability of our young students to get back to some kind of a normal life and how important that is to their health as well. We will be able to, and we're working very hard to deliver the plans that we have for after Easter. Of course, we do have to monitor everything. Of course, we have to track where we are with the disease. But our teachers have done incredible work in keeping our schools safe. And as we move into the after Easter environment, I mean, we are in a situation where by the end of this month, we will have a million doses of vaccine that are coming into came into Ireland. And for example, then when we get to the end of April, it will be a million more on top of that, and increasing month after month as we approach the summer.
Okay, so if we're looking at this now, from what you've said there, it's not going to happen on the 5th of April that we'll see any major lifting, but maybe by the end of April there might be significant change.
Well, what the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste have said, and Minister Ryan has said from the start of this year, is that any change in our public health guidance is going to be gradual and it is going to be very, very careful. I mean, your own headlines there a moment ago, just before I came on, pointed to the progress that we've made in another gradual reduction in the number of people in our hospitals. At a point earlier on in this year, only a few short months ago, that figure was over 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm. But I know you're watching closely the number of people who are being referred for testing and how that's changing this week.
Yes, indeed. And this is why we have a process in relation to how we will make the decision next week. We have seen the rate of community transmission within our country come down radically versus where we were earlier in the year. But it has stabilised at a level that is higher than we would have hoped. And we have seen some concerning trends in recent days. So that is why, when we give further guidance next week, it is going to be gradual. It is going to look to build on the progress that we've made. And combined with the vaccination programme that is being implemented at the moment, we are going to get to a better place in the coming months.
Maybe you would agree there are some things that could happen that would be safe, like, for example, click and collect. And that, you know, the absence of that is deeply impacting retailers, isn't it?
I absolutely understand the impact it is having on our retailers, the number of non-essential retailers that are closed and the number of essential retailers that do have a frustration about the way click and collect is both defined and operated at the moment. But I can't deal with any one particular issue in isolation. It's the aggregate of lots of different decisions that a government make and then businesses make that affect mobility within our country, which in turn affects community transmission.
Yeah, you'll know, because I know you were listening to me saying there earlier on that we've got Michael O'Flynn, the developer, on the programme shortly, and he'll be saying that his industry is being discriminated against because only social housing and essential projects are allowed to operate. Should construction open across the board?
I just, again, just repeat what I said to you there a moment ago. It's not about dealing with each issue in isolation. It's how we pull this together to continue to do the right thing by our country. What the government has said throughout all of this is that we're well aware of how the closure of construction has such a profound effect on our ability to build homes and on the number of people who are unemployed. And we are looking at this as a decision point for next week. You know, we have 456,580 people claiming the pandemic unemployment payment this week. And we have, as you well know and your listeners know, such an imperative to make progress on housing. But we will make a decision on these matters next week. And at that point, we'll be able to give you the clarity that you need one way or the other regarding the next stage in how we can get our economy back to work safely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you hear people like Michael O'Flynn saying that, you know, saying this is discriminatory, we want to open, we need to build houses, you have to find the money to pay the people who aren't working.
That is correct. And you will have person after person who will be on your programme, sector after sector, view after view, doing the right thing by their businesses, by their sector, making the case for the people they represent and they employ. And that's what they should do. And that's what they are doing, because they're valuable to our society and to our economy. But as somebody who has a deep privilege to be holding office and to be a member of the government of our country, the government has responsibility for everything. We've responsibility for all the sectors, and we've responsibility for the health of our country. And as continues to be the case, we are trying to get the balance right between all of this. Claire, I know so much. There are people who are working at the moment who are worried, will they work again? There are people at the moment who are worried, will they ever, you know, hold a hand again, let alone shake a hand, and the effect all of this has on our mental and economic health. But all of these things are being considered so carefully in the round. And next week, we'll make more decisions that guide our country to safety.
Okay, reports yesterday that people are being turned down for mortgage protection cover if they've had COVID-19. That seems a very odd decision for those insurance companies to make. 231,000 people have had COVID and many are fully recovered.
And that's a matter that we're taking very seriously, Claire. I'm aware of the development of this as an issue. We've done one thing about it. We'll do another thing. The first thing that we've done is officials in my own department have now contacted Insurance Ireland in relation to this. My understanding is that many of the decisions that have been made relate to a deferral of a coverage decision as opposed to the coverage decision actually being turned down. And then secondly, Minister Sean Fleming is currently meeting all of the key insurers in our country about a number of different issues. And Sean will be raising this with those companies as well.
Mm-hmm. But it would be wrong, wouldn't it, to take a blanket decision on people who've had COVID-19 and say you're not getting protection here?
Yes, it would be, because all of our health, all of our conditions, all varies person by person. And what the insurance sector should be doing is they should be looking at this on a case-by-case basis as they look at the health of all of those who they're looking to cover. And, of course, need to be aware of the growing amount of evidence that we have regarding the effect of our vaccines in reducing the spread of the disease and dealing with many of the symptoms that we're so concerned about.
Also on the mortgage front, there are reports that lenders are turning down mortgage applications from people who aren't even on the wage subsidy scheme, but their employer is availing of it. And some employees don't even know that their employers are availing of this scheme, and yet it's impacting their chances of being approved for a mortgage. Are they allowed to do that?
Well, those who are providing mortgages have to make a decision regarding whether they want to lend or not. But to put your issue in the round, last year in 2020, €8.4 billion of new mortgage lending was approved. That was down versus the previous year. But versus other years, we were issuing around 8.5 to 8.7 billion euro worth of new lending every year, or our banks were doing that. So a very large amount of new mortgages were approved last year. And what I just want to reiterate again, what I have said to the CEOs of our banks, which they have agreed with me on, is that every application has to be assessed on a case-by-case basis. And many of the employers who are receiving the employment wage subsidy scheme are viable, but will be even more viable and successful in the future when we beat the disease.
Well, yeah, that makes it even more unfair because
happened last year.
Yeah, so you're saying, are you saying it's not happening, or you haven't seen evidence that it's happening?
Oh, I have seen enough evidence that it is happening on a case by case basis, on an alleged general basis, I should say, for me to have raised this with our banks and for our banks to have emphasised to me that it must be happening on a case-by-case basis.
Mm, it's just strange, isn't it?
The fact that an employer is receiving the employment wage subsidy scheme is a sign that, yes, they're in a challenging situation at the moment, but we should be confident that the receipt of that support is what will help them to grow again and to retain the security of the jobs in the near future.
Yeah, which is why it makes it even stranger that the banks would take that view, because the EWSS scheme is for viable businesses, as you say.
And that is why, as I said, Claire, we have been very clear that while acknowledging that it is up to lenders to decide what is the loan they grant and upon what terms, I've equally been clear that the receipt of the employment wage subsidy scheme of itself should not be a reason why somebody cannot get a loan, that it is just an acknowledgement that a company and a job needs particular help at the moment, but there's every reason to hope and believe that later on in the year, that company, that job will be in a far better place.
Okay, Patrick,
which is why it has to be done case by case.
Patrick is listening, and he has asked, or said rather, that he's very worried about government planning to pay for all of this with high borrowing. Are we creating a rod for our own backs for the future, he wants to know, or is your attitude that it will be somebody else's problem?
Well, I guess I've been the Minister for Finance for quite a few years now, that year after year made the case for us reducing our deficit. Then I brought us into a position where we balanced our books. Then we were in a position where we had the surplus. I'm also the Minister for Finance that in the last budget of the last Dáil brought in a budget that had no tax changes, no social welfare increases, very little new additional spending, because I believed it was the safe thing to do for our country. So I've never been in the business of passing a problem on to anybody else in the future or anybody else in government. And I've made the case for that now for many years. But if I was to take the argument of your listener a stage forward and to say, well, what we're going to do is reduce borrowing now by reducing the economic supports that we have in place, or by cutting back on health expenditure, two things would happen. The first thing is we'd have even more people unemployed, even more companies closing, and we'd be weakening our ability to grow again in the future. And the second thing that would happen is that our ability to deal and beat COVID, which we're going to do, would take a big step back. So what I'm trying to do at the moment, Claire, is get the balance right between funding what we are doing through the taxes we're collecting and additional borrowing to create the foundation for our country to grow again. Mm-hmm. And we are getting the balance right.
And you have said previously that we'll get to a point in the future when indebtedness and deficit management become preeminent again. We're not at that point now, you have said. When is it coming, though?
It is a point that we will get to. At a point, there will be a budget constraint. And at a point, we will need to look at how we reduce borrowing in a very safe way. When that point will be in the aftermath of the health emergency being defeated and as we see our economy showing clear signs of recovery. If you look at the figures that we have at the moment, for example, the interest rate that we have in our debt at the moment is around 4 billion euro. But that is a reduction on 3.5 billion euro versus where we were in recent years. And the reason why we can get the kind of interest rate that we can on new borrowing is for two reasons. We restored our credit worthiness through to how we ran our economy in the past. And we now have the backing of the European Central Bank due to the higher level of creditworthiness we have. And we have to use those two ingredients to protect our domestic economy so that when we have beaten COVID, we can get the 456,000 people who are on the PUP, get them back to work. And as we do that, that will deal with much of the national finance difficulties that we may have in the future, which I believe we'll avoid.
Is there capacity there to introduce further supports for the hospitality sector? Because I know you've heard them and we've heard them here on this programme again and again say they're the one sector they feel they're the hardest hit, first to close, last to reopen and so on. And they've consistently asked for more help, and you have outlined all of the other schemes that are underway. Is there anything in the tank for hospitality?
But we are doing so much at the moment for that sector in recognition of how incredibly important they are to our country and to our country's economy. They are amongst the largest recipients of the Employment Wage Subsidy Scheme. It's the reason we reduced the VAT rate to 9%. It's the reason why we've cancelled commercial rates.
And will those two measures continue?
Well, look, we'll have to deal with all of those as we work our way through COVID. We also have the COVID restriction support scheme in place that's made €330 million available directly to that sector because they need it and they deserve it.
They want it doubled.
Well, I just go back to the really important questions you were putting to me earlier on there a few moments ago, Claire, where you were raising the really important questions there regarding the high level of borrowing that we have and the higher level of debt that we are now incurring. I am constantly facing understandable needs from different sectors who make the case for more support. What we have to do is deliver as much of that support as we can while avoiding further greater difficulties in the future. And yes, of course, people, you know, that sector will want, for example, the COVID restriction support scheme doubled. But it's a scheme that's paid out over €340 million now to 25,000 different business premises within our country. And that's the difference that it is making.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, they can't help themselves. They there's very little they can do to bring in money. You know, they're really hamstrung.
Oh, absolutely, Claire. And this is why when you've been putting the different questions to me about each different sector, I've caveated every answer I've given back to you with a recognition of that point. The businesses that are on your show, the representatives that are on your show, their businesses are closed or they're nearly closed. They're looking at all the people they used to employ. They're looking at the people they are employing and they're seeing the anxiety in their eyes and the worry about where we're going to be by the summer. Mm-hmm. I absolutely understand that why those cases and claims are being made at the moment. But as against that, we have now spent and needed to spend, and it was the right thing to spend, nearly €12 billion now in our employment wage subsidy schemes, in our cancellation of rates, in the COVID restriction support scheme, to give very high levels of support to that sector. Okay. And the supports that we have in place in terms of design and in terms of support are amongst the best in Europe and indeed across the world.
We're doing that
because I know how much these businesses matter.
In the context of Europe, the EU is expected to announce these new plans restricting vaccine exports. What will our government's response be to that? Micheál Martin has already said it would be a retrograde move. What's your own view?
That we need to be so careful in relation to this, that I absolutely understand the need to look at how we can protect vaccine supply for Europe, because protecting vaccine supply for Europe is the prerequisite to how we can have the millions of more doses coming into Ireland across April and May and June. But we do need to be careful in putting in place measures like this, that it doesn't lead to other things happening that unravel our ability to get other vaccines or cause even further difficulties at a very, very heightened time.
Of course, we'll have limited...
A very difficult time.
Yeah,
but the Commission have said these are proposals that they're bringing in, and the Commission, I know, are as aware of all of the challenges in relation to this as I am.
So Ireland will be opposing that proposal?
we would be taking great care in relation to seeing those proposals actually being implemented. Before we could indicate if we're actually opposed to them, we have to see what the proposals are going to be, and I understand further detail on those will be made available in advance of the European Council that will be happening tomorrow. So for now, it's one of great concern, and we'll need to see the proposals fully before we form a full national view on them.
Would we put ourselves in a position where we would not comply with an export ban?
Well, actually, the way in which all of these vaccines are being sourced and delivered for Ireland is actually part overall of the great European effort that
hasn't been that great.
Well, actually, if you look at the hundreds of millions of vaccines that are going to be available to Europe and to Ireland across April and May and June, I would respectfully make the case that if it wasn't for all of Europe coming together to access vaccines in the way that we are at the moment, we wouldn't have certainty about the level of supply that we have, and the difficulties that we face could even be greater. And I believe, yes, of course, there have been well-documented challenges in relation to where we are with vaccine supply, but those challenges would be far greater if we as a country were facing those challenges on our own.
I want to ask you about Hazel Chew, who we're going to be speaking to later on in the programme, the chairperson of the Green Party. Now, you had a pact with the Greens about Senate elections, didn't you? Who was going to run? You have a Fine Gael candidate and a Fianna Fáil candidate. The Green chair is now running as an independent with the support of various Green TDs. So would you say now that the Greens have broken that pact?
It was very important and reassuring to hear the leader of the Green Party, Minister Eamon Ryan, indicate yesterday that there is an agreement in place amongst parties who are in government regarding how we vote in the upcoming Senate elections. And that's the key thing.
OK, so he has said he's going to vote as planned, according to the pact with you guys in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. But it's not great, is it, to have such instability in one of your government partners?
This is a very, very stable government. This is a government of three different parties that's working very hard on behalf of the people of Ireland in dealing with all of the challenges that you've just referred to. Every single political party, including my own, at different points has different ups and downs, but those ups and downs they're so minor in comparison to the efforts between the three parties to help our country beat COVID and the absolute determination that the three parties have to do that.
So it's a distraction.
Claire, I think you said you're going to have Hazel on the programme later on in the morning, and I'll be tuning in to hear you put those questions to her. As I said to you, we're very clear about where we are in these matters as three parties in government.
Minister, thank you for joining us on the programme. Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue.